Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Thursday, May 25th, 2017. It was a missed opportunity at the dedication of NATO's new headquarters in Brussels today. The gnarled remnants of the North Tower stood alongside two sections of the Berlin Wall that divided the German city until 1989. They were unveiled in a ceremony where Donald Trump could have spoken about Article 5. Article 5 of the North Atlantic Treaty, established in 1949, where member nations vowed to come to each other's defense. Instead, Trump, who toyed with pulling out of NATO because he believes other countries are not paying their fair share, chose to lecture NATO members, saying they must finally contribute their fair share and meet their obligations.
Over the last 8 years, the United States spent more on defense than all other NATO countries combined. If all NATO members had spent just 2% of their GDP on defense last year, we would have had another $119 billion for our collective defense and for the financing of additional NATO reserves. We should recognize that with these chronic underpayments and growing threats, even 2% of GDP is insufficient to close the gaps in modernizing, readiness, and the size of forces. We have to make up for the many years lost. 2% is the bare minimum for confronting today's very real and very vicious threats.
NATO members looked on as Trump spoke, using the attack in Manchester to stoke his anti-immigrant stance.
My travels and meetings have given me renewed hope that nations of many faiths can unite to defeat terrorism, a common threat to all of humanity. Terrorism must be stopped in its tracks, or the horror you saw in Manchester and so many other places will continue forever. You have thousands and thousands of people pouring into our various countries and spreading throughout. And in many cases, we have no idea who they are. We must be tough, we must be strong, and we must be vigilant. The NATO of the future must include a great focus on terrorism and immigration.
Earlier, Barack Obama wasn't far away. He joined German Chancellor Angela Merkel in front of the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin at a panel discussion on democracy in front of thousands.
Because of globalization and because of technology and the disruptions that have occurred, the inequality that exists between nations and within countries, because of the fact that the internet brings us all closer together, but we're still from different cultures and sometimes feel disoriented by the world shrinking because of things like the refugee crisis, that this order that has been created has to be changed. It has to be updated. It has to be continually renewed, because there's a competing narrative of fear and xenophobia and nationalism and intolerance and anti-democratic trends. And so when I think about my role when I was president, but also now as a citizen of the United States and part of the world community, what I think is most important is that we rally around those values and ideals that are best, and we have to push back against those trends that would violate human rights, or that would suppress democracy, or that would restrict individual freedoms of conscience and religion. And that is going to be a significant battle that we have to fight, all of us have to be a part of. And it's not always easy.
Barack Obama in front of a spot where the Berlin Wall once stood. It was his first speech in Europe since leaving the White House. It's just 4 months before Germany's election. And with Obama's favorability rating in Germany very high, his appearance with Merkel broadcast live on four networks raised concerns that he was helping her re-election campaign. In other news, the Fourth Circuit Federal Appeals Court in Richmond, Virginia, refused to reinstate Donald Trump's revised travel ban, which targets six Muslim-majority countries. The court sided with groups that say the policy illegally targets Muslims. It blocks the administration from temporarily suspending new visas for people from Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Trump will likely appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. A central question in the case is whether court should consider Trump's past statements about wanting to bar Muslims from entering the country. The federal judge in Maryland who blocked the travel ban cited comments made by Trump and his aides during the campaign and after the election as evidence that the policy was primarily motivated by religion. The Virginia-based Fourth Circuit is the first appeals court to rule on the revised travel ban, which the Trump administration had hoped would avoid the legal problems the first version encountered. In Manchester, England, mourners gathered this morning to observe a minute of silence in remembrance of the 22 people killed on Monday at a concert in the terrorist attack. People laid flowers, cards, and letters which reflected sadness and resilience at the site of the attack.
We love Manchester! Manchester!
Meanwhile, the fast-moving investigation into the concert bombing in Manchester has spurred a diplomatic conflict over leaks to U.S. media. British officials are particularly angry that photos detailing evidence about the bomb were published in the New York Times. This, although it's not clear that the paper obtained the photos from U.S. officials. British security services are also upset that the name of the attacker was apparently leaked by U.S. officials while British police were withholding it and while raids were underway in Manchester and in Libya, where the bomber's father lives. Hopkins, the Manchester police officer, said the leaks had caused much distress for families that are already suffering terribly with their loss. Today, Donald Trump pledged to get to the bottom of the leaks of sensitive information. He called the leaks deeply troubling. He said he's asking the Justice Department and other agencies to launch a complete review of the matter. The New York Times, defending its publication of the crime scene photographs, says its coverage has been both comprehensive and responsible. It says images and information presented were neither graphic nor disrespectful of victims and consistent with the common line of reporting of weapons used in horrific crimes. The paper quoted Roy Greenslade, a professor of journalism at City University in London, who said that the messenger is blamed for the message. Our business, he said, is the business of disclosure. If facts exist in the public domain, especially over sensitive matters, then our job is to publish them. That the first position of the authorities is always secrecy. And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. In other news, House Democrats who criticized the Trump administration health care plan weren't far off in their estimate of how many Americans would lose health care coverage, even without estimates from the Congressional Budget Office, which came out yesterday afternoon. The CBO estimated that 23 million would go without health coverage under Trump's plan. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says we shouldn't call the GOP plan a health care bill.
We can call this legislation whatever we want. You can call it a destroy healthcare bill. You could call it a tax break for the rich bill, but we should not call it a healthcare bill, because I have never seen a healthcare bill which throws 23 million Americans off of health insurance. That's not a healthcare bill. It's not a healthcare bill when you cut Medicaid by $800 billion, denying health insurance to children or some of the poorest people in this country or middle-class people who need help with nursing home care for their parents. It is not a healthcare bill when you defund Planned Parenthood and deny 2.5 million women their choice of health care providers. It is not a health care bill when you force older workers to pay 2, 3, 4 times more for the health care that they currently get. So call it whatever you want, but please do not call this bill a health care bill. This is legislation that provides over $200 billion in tax breaks to the wealthiest 2%. It is legislation which provides hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks for the insurance companies, the drug companies, and other people in the medical industry. Our job is to come together and improve the Affordable Care Act. That means lower deductibles, lower co-payments, lower prescription drug costs. Our job is to pass a health care bill, not to throw millions of people off of the health insurance.
Meanwhile, today, House Speaker Paul Ryan says what the GOP bill does is give people choice.
We see a law that's collapsing. We see a new study that just came out yesterday from HHS saying premiums have doubled in America because of Obamacare. People can't afford this. And so what CBO just told us is the reforms that we put in this bill will help lower premiums. And so I'm very encouraged by that. But I think what members are frustrated with is what's behind the CBO analysis about who gets insured and who doesn't get insured. If you leave it up to a person's choice, then they'll make a choice. If the government's going to stop forcing people to buy something that they don't want to buy, then they won't buy it. And that's basically what CBO is saying. And I think the lack of clarity on that point is what has members frustrated.
This isn't how Senator Patty Murray, Assistant Senate Minority Leader, sees it. She says families are really scared.
I've heard from so many of them in my home state of Washington and across the country about how Trump care threatens their health, their family's health, and their ability to make ends meet. And today, CBO's score tells us what we already knew about Trump care, and it confirms the worst fears of families across the country. Under Trump care, if you're one of the hundreds of millions of people in the United States who has a pre-existing condition, or if you're a woman, your health care costs could go up dramatically. If you are on Medicaid, you could lose that coverage along with tens of millions of other people. If you are a Planned Parent patient, Planned Parenthood patient, you are very likely going to lose your provider, the one you trust, because of politicians in Washington, D.C. But if you're a big healthcare corporation, odds are good you're going to look at a massive tax break. And of course, if you are President Trump, this is just one huge win just for you. Now, Senator McConnell said this morning the CBO score would, quote, repeat things we already knew about the House bill. That is completely true. But let's be very clear. The principles behind Trump care in the House and Trump care in the all-male, closed-door Senate Republican working group are the same. That it's fine for sick people and seniors to pay more for worse coverage, that insurance companies should be able to sell people insurance that's no better than snake oil, and that if people nationwide lose coverage altogether, it's somehow no problem. So as long as the wealthiest get their tax breaks and President Trump gets his partisan political win, they're fine.
The House of Representatives tried to put lipstick on a pig, and they created a really big mess.
Oregon Senator Ron Wyden.
And I just want to tick off a couple of areas that we have been touching on in the Finance Committee. What is still intact is more than $800 billion in Medicaid cuts. Big mess. And I just want to tick off a couple of areas that we have been touching on in the Finance Committee. What is still intact is more than $800 billion in Medicaid cuts. And these Medicaid cuts are going to hit American communities like a wrecking ball. And the pain is going to be felt throughout the ages. Youngsters with special needs are going to be affected because Medicaid plays a key role in their care. That's why I saw some of their advocates in tears when they were talking to me at home about the Medicaid cuts. If you're a high school student and you, say, have a brush with cancer because they blow holes in the current protections for Americans against discrimination with pre-existing conditions, those high school students, hopefully they have a remission, but they'd be carrying around under this bill a scarlet letter through the rest of their lives. So the fact of the matter is the pain is seen through the ages. And with 2 out of 3 older people who are on Medicaid also getting their nursing home care that way, what the House is saying for the older people, despite the fact you did everything right in your life, you paid for your kids' education, you saved, you never took that vacation, you may have nowhere to turn when it comes to long-term care. And finally, the next 10 days, we believe, are going to be crucial. Senators and House members are going to be home over the Memorial Day recess. I have 5 town hall meetings scheduled for Oregon. And what I'm going to be doing is using that time to make sure we can stop dead in its tracks any further effort here in the Senate to maybe put another cosmetic change or two on the House bill and pass it. The basic frame is still alive in the Senate Republican caucus. I'm going to close with this, because the basic frame is hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars of tax cuts for the most fortunate in America, and hundreds of billions of dollars in Medicaid cuts for the most vulnerable. So the next 10 days, we are going to be all over this country trying to educate people about what's at issue. On the Medicaid issue, I think a lot of people still think that folks on Medicaid are kind of loafing and not working. 2 out of 3 of the people on Medicaid are in fact working. So those are the messages we're going to be getting out, and we're going to make sure that all of America understands over the next 10 days that if the Senate Republicans come back, try to put a cosmetic change or two on it, and then, as Senator Murray points out, fast-track it through the Senate, we're going to be stopping it cold, and certainly the CBO information gives us a big big boost.
Oregon Senator Ron Wyden voicing objections to the Trump Care bill. Senate Republicans are holding closed-door meetings in an effort to write their own legislation. Meanwhile, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell didn't mention the Budget Office report. He said Obama's law is not going to just magically somehow get better. In other national news, eyes are on a special election in Montana for a flippable U.S. House seat. This is where Greg Gianforte, the far-right Republican millionaire, is running against progressive Rob Quist. Gianforte slammed a Guardian reporter who is simply trying to ask a question about the GOP health plan to take away health care from 23 million people.
Into the CBO score, because you know you were waiting to make your decision about healthcare until you saw the bill and it just came out.
And what you thought. We'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have the
speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last Jesus time you came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here.
Jesus.
Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the Guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
You, the last guy, did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hell out of here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
You gotta leave.
Move On released an ad with that audio saying Gianforte is unfit to serve, urging Montana voters to vote for Rob Quist. In other national news, the oil company behind the Dakota Access Pipeline is facing intense scrutiny from regulators and activists over a series of leaks around the country. This includes a major spill now believed to be significantly larger than initially reported. Documents obtained by The Guardian suggest a spill from the Rover Pipeline that Ohio regulators originally described as 2 million gallons might now be more than twice as large. The revelation was included in a legal challenge filed by activists on Wednesday to block the natural gas pipeline run by the Energy Transfer Partners, the corporation that operates the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline and which is now facing numerous government fines and violations. The complaint against the Rover Pipeline, which has been cited for more than a dozen environmental incidents, including a spill into a wetland that Ohio regulators described as a tragedy, comes on the heels of reports that the Dakota Access Pipeline had three recent leaks before it was even fully operational. In March, the Dakota Access Pipeline and a feeder line leaked more than 100 gallons of oil in North Dakota. Tribal leaders and attorneys say the leaks bolster their demands for further environmental review of the pipeline. Back to Trump news, the New York Times reported today that American spies collected information last summer revealing that senior Russian intelligence and political officials were discussing how to exert influence over Trump through his advisors. This is according to three current and former American officials familiar with the intelligence. The conversations focused on Paul Manafort, the Trump campaign chair at the time, and Mike Flynn, the retired general who was advising Trump. Both men had indirect ties to Russian officials who appeared confident that each could be used to help shape Trump's opinions on Russia. And this week, former CIA Director John Brennan, who led the agency from 2013 until January 20th of this year, testified about possible collusion between Russia and the Trump presidential campaign. Brennan says intelligence information tells him that Russia brazenly interfered in the election, and he says their actions were directly against the Clintons rather than for Trump. Brennan is questioned by Florida Representative Tom Rooney.
With regard to hacking, when did you learn of the Russian hacking in the last election cycle?
In the summer.
And did you at that time notify the both campaigns that you or did somebody at the agency or are you aware that both campaigns were notified at that time that there was an effort by the Russians to hack and try to influence the political campaign of last year?
I was aware that both campaigns were being contacted and notified about it, yes.
You said, I believe, to Mr. Gowdy that you believe that there was information of contact between people in the Trump universe and Moscow. Whether or not that was collusion or not remains to be seen. You said you didn't know if it was actual collusion. I think that your words were, I don't know. Can you tell us whether or not, from the information that you've looked at, it looks like the intelligence shows that Moscow was actually rooting for Donald Trump, or were they rooting against Hillary Clinton? And why?
I think my assessment is it was both. I think that they, at different times in the campaign, they felt that the fortunes of one candidate or the other was going up or down. And I think that they most of the time believed that Secretary Clinton was going to win the election. And so their efforts to denigrate her were not just to try to diminish her chances of winning, but also to hurt her and for her eventual presidency. But also, it's my assessment that they clearly had a more favorable view toward Mr. Trump, and actions they were taking were trying to increase his prospects, even though I think that they probably felt as though they were not all that great.
Why? Why did they want him and not her?
I think it's a variety of reasons. One is that there was had been a traditional, I think, animus certainly between Mr. Putin and Secretary Clinton, as well as there has not been a good relationship between the Putins and between Putin and the Clintons over the years. Felt that Secretary Clinton, with some of her actions while she was Secretary of State, led to some of the domestic disturbances inside of Russia. And I think he was more concerned that she was going to be more rigid on certain issues, particularly on human rights and other issues.
But what was Donald Trump going to do for them then? Or was it just that they didn't like Hillary?
No, I think they felt that Mr. Trump, being a bit of an outsider, that they have in the past had some good relations with businessmen who happened to elevate into positions of government authority, and so felt as though, from a negotiating standpoint, that he might be more amenable to
good relations. What if that's true? One of the questions that I have, and this might be more appropriate for closed session, but if that's true, was there in your review of the evidence, was there more damaging evidence of Secretary Clinton that was not revealed? And if it wasn't revealed, what does that say about the Russian ability to be actually rooting for her to win?
Well, yeah, we can talk about it in close, but as I said, I think that they anticipated that Secretary Clinton was going to win the election. And so I believe that they tried to damage and bloody her before the election. But also, I would have anticipated that had she been elected, that their efforts to denigrate her and hurt her would have continued during her presidency. So if they did collect more information about her that they did not release, I think they were probably husbanding it for another day.
Ex-CIA Chief John Brennan at a House Intelligence Committee hearing earlier this week. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, May 25th, 2017. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
There's a great and a bloody fight around this whole world tonight. In the battle, the bombs and shrapnel rain. Hitler told the world around he would tear our union down. But our union's gonna break them slavery chains. And our union's gonna break them slavery chains. I walked up on a mountain in the middle of the sky. Could see every farm and every town. I could see all the people in this whole wide world. That's a union that'll tear the fascists down, down, down. That's a union that'll tear the fascists down. When I think of the men and the ships going down while the Russians fight on across the Don. There's London in ruins and Paris in chains. Good people, what are we waiting on? Good people, what are we waiting on? So I thank the Soviets and the mighty Chinese vets, the allies, the whole wide world around. To the battling British, thanks, you can have 10 million Yanks if it takes them to tear the fascists down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the fascists down. But when I think of the ships and the men going down and the Russians fight on across the Don, there's London in ruins and Paris in chains. Good people, what are we waiting on? Good people, what are we waiting on? So I thank the Soviets and the mighty Chinese vets, the allies, the whole wide world around. To the battling British, thanks, you can have 10 million Yanks if it takes them to tear the fascists down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the fascists down.